I'm Scott Benson. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Scott!
And it's by the grace of God, the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship that I've been sober since May 23rd of 1989. What? The happy birthday, Northern Plains Group. Kind of a lot of emotion and a lot of history has transpired in the last year, going on your sixth anniversary, and I want to thank Aaron for asking me to share. I spoke at your first meeting through. I was living in Spokane, Washington. And at your first meeting, for those of you that weren't here, there's 32 people here, and at the first meeting of NPG, and it was the last Tuesday in April, and I was living in Washington and just happened to be kind of, I can't remember exactly, I think I was vacationing or something, here in North Dakota, and Jeff had asked me to speak. And when I spoke at that meeting, I would have never guessed that 6 years later, it would have grown as much as it's grown. And all of the secretaries touched upon it in one way or another, is that the what saved my bacon and probably is saving the bacon of anyone that's been here for a little while is that someone went out of their way to be helpful. You know, the backbone of Alcoholics Anonymous is one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. And I didn't, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not think that Alcoholics Anonymous would fix what was wrong with me. The people that, there's many people here, but your past secretaries are people that I love and respect. And I have probably heard, not so spiritual things about all of the past secretaries. And I still love them and I still respect them because in Alcoholics Anonymous, as you hear in many circles, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, takes a carpenter to build a barn, and any jackass, excuse my language, can tear it down. And these are people who've discovered the key to staying sober is intensive work with other alcoholics. That works when other activities fail, and that they're people I love and respect because of that. They is all of our flaws, and we're all flawed people. That's what brings us together. It is in coming together and being helpful to one another, and that's what they do. I mean, in my book, if you're helpful to other people, I think you're a winner in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't I was asked to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and to talk a little bit about my alcoholism. As far back as I can remember, I always felt like there was something wrong with me. I felt cursed with red hair. And let me tell you something. If you don't have any hair or you have red hair, you do have it harder. And I really felt like I was given a raw deal from day one. I didn't know who my father was. And so I felt like that was a wedge against me. I knew that his name was John Thomas, and oftentimes after I started drinking, I knew he was from Florida, and I knew he had a brother named Oscar, and I would get drunk, and I'd call information and for John R. Thomas, any city, Florida. And I would call these John Thomases and ask them if they had a brother named Oscar. But I never had the courage to do something like that sober. And I loved when I started drinking, I loved what it did for me because I always felt like there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have tattoos. Unfortunately, because I was a never was, is how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't a has-been. There's some has-beens. I sponsor some has-beens. Mike F. is a has-been, but I'm not a has-been. I was a never was. I take that back. My one big accomplishment prior to Alcoholics Anonymous is I grew my hair to the middle of my back. That was my accomplishment that I had contributed to life. But I, I, uh, I always felt like I wasn't enough. I felt like people talked down to me. And what I've discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous is that when I have low self-worth, that when people are trying to teach me, I think they're talking down to me when they're trying to teach me. Because I think that even though I feel like I'm missing something, I have too much of an ego to actually ask for help. And so I try to wing it. And oftentimes that has been one of the biggest things, is I compare my raw insides to other people's outsides, and I come up short every time. You know, your secretaries, I would love to have Jeff's wit for a day. Well, take that back, for about 4 hours. And I would love to have Chad's, Chad, if you get to know him, one of the... I didn't see what happened, so... If you get to know Chad, the one thing about Chad is he will really go out of his way to be helpful. And if you get by the fluff and what comes across as arrogance, which is really not arrogance at all, but sometimes, you know, he's always had the right shirts, the right bikes, the right everything. And Kirsten, she's got a lot of excitement. And I wish I had a tattoo story like Kirsten. And then there's Mike. You know, the first time I was living in Jamestown. I've lived in Jamestown a couple of times, and I don't mean to be jumping around, but I don't ever know what I'm going to talk about. And I remember one time I heard someone in Alcoholics Anonymous say that if you have to take notes and talk, that it's not coming from the heart. And I asked my sponsor what he thought about that, and he said, apparently they've never heard you speak. And so I never know what I'm going to say, and I'm too insecure in my time in sobriety to pull out notes, although I did write them, but I'd be embarrassed to display them. But anyway, getting back to Mike, because that's what Mike wants to hear right now, is Mike, I knew he was going to be okay in Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I met Mike, his sponsor was Jeff, and I knew Jeff would take good care of him. But I also knew that Mike was willing, because any time I went to Minot, whether it was a Saturday night, a Thursday night, a Monday night, Mike was at a meeting. Mike was at a meeting. That's my earliest memory of Mike. Kenny, on the other hand, he was... Kenny, I remember one time Kenny telling me that he really thought that selling vacuum cleaners or something along those lines was really going to turn his life around. And some sales job that was... I remember when I was new, and one of my first non-sponsor approved actions was I quit my job doing dishes to sell Rainbow vacuum cleaners. And they'd sold me that I was going to be rich. And I remember the first day of the interview that after about an hour, anyone who looked like a salesman was gone, except all of us that didn't look like salespeople they hired. Go figure. Anyway, that little experience is why my sobriety date is May 23rd of 1989 and not January 10th of 1989. I was one of those guys in Alcoholics Anonymous that I took 2 1-year chips because I never told anyone I drank. And I remember I would say to myself, I would go to sleep every night thinking, how am I going to fix this? How am I going to keep my sobriety date but be honest? Because I know this honesty, this rigorous honesty thing's got to be important, because they got it all over Alcoholics Anonymous. But, of course, that's what a good four steps for, and a good fifth step. But anyway, so I've known Kenny a long time, and... I've watched him grow, and there are qualities. Kenny's very decisive. Sometimes he's decisive in the wrong direction, but he's decisive, and I appreciate that about him. And Aaron is always very kind, and I think she spots that I have, no matter how hard I work Alcoholics Anonymous, I am often intimidated by the opposite sex and stay away from them, other than my wife, of course, because she's married to me and my bride. But I'm just, whatever, it's just part of my personality. For fear I will be embarrassed by, it's the same fear I had in high school, why I never said hi to anyone. All these things, when I'm sober, what my problem is I cannot be comfortable in my own skin sober. And our book describes it as being restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm always restless, you know, I'm opening the cupboards, closing the cupboards. I'm irritable, and my irritability takes two shapes. I'm either on the muscle with people, intimidating people, or I isolate because I can't stand how people live or how people treat me. And I'm discontent. Whatever it is I have is not good enough for me. It is not good enough for me. And that's what I, in school, when I would walk down the hall, my biggest fear was I would say hi. I never said hi to anyone unless they said hi to me first. But my biggest fear is I would say hi to someone, and they would say, "What are you looking at, you dork?" And thus, it was easier just to walk by people I knew with a strange look on my face. And but that same scenario, drinking, I remember getting drunk and going to school and high-fiving my Phi Ed instructor. And I don't ever remember having that kind of excitement towards life unless I was drinking. And, of course, that got me suspended from school, but it was still, nevertheless, I loved, once I started drinking, I loved what it did for me. And what it did is it took a guy like me that never felt like I was enough and made me feel enough for a while. The problem with that is that I couldn't seem to control the amount of alcohol I took. Once I started drinking, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I'd wind up in Glenbourne, North Dakota in a wheat field, wondering how I got there. I didn't know. One experience, Jeff always reminds me, he likes this story, and I kind of like this story too, is I was drinking one night, and I'd been to treatment because of my drinking, because when you drink and you drink like I drink, you tend to get in trouble with the law. And so I'd been to treatment a couple of times and knew I probably shouldn't drink, but I believe that if I only drank a couple of times a week, I'd probably be okay. And on one of these couple of times a week, I started drinking and I blacked out. And I was familiar with the blackout because they described it in treatment. And I used to always think that blackouts were, I didn't know whether to believe them or not when people would say you did strange things. And, you know, you never do good things. There are always terrible things that you do in a blackout. But I have a blackout, and I think some of the reason I share this is that it's a demonstration of alcoholism, but I'm also looking for someone to actually say that was my yard. But I suppose deep down is that I came out of a blackout, and I'm driving a car. It's my car. I know it's my car because the wires are hanging out of the dash, and I'm the kind of guy that gets it done just enough. And I got it done just enough to get the stereo working, but I'm driving, and I look beside me, and there's a guy I don't know. Have no idea where he is, other than in my brief conversation with him, I was able to deduct that his wife was giving birth to their baby at the hospital, and he's out drinking with me. Then I glance in the rearview mirror to notice that, now I've got a 1974 Olds Omega with the inline six. It was not a hot car then, isn't now. But I had boat equipment in the back seat and coming out the back windows. It was apparent that this dude does not own a boat dealership. Real apparent. And I did not say to myself, "Scott, you can't drink. It's just crazy for you to drink." What I said to myself is, "I will never drink Mad Dog 2020 again." Because if that's what it does to you. And, of course, by the way, that night, someone in Mandan, North Dakota, got a yard full of boat equipment. Hey, we're good at coming up with quick solutions. The other thing that's funny about that, the next day, my mother had told me, my mother had been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous was I knew a little bit about the men of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they always wanted to help my mom. And then they wanted to move into our house. And so I didn't like Alcoholics Anonymous. But she was always wanting to, when she would get sober, she'd want everybody to be sober. That was one of the things I suppose I hurt my mother with the most, as I used to tell her things like, "You think everybody's an alcoholic because you're an alcoholic." And I am so grateful today that she did, because I got sober young, and I've been able to do a lot of things that a guy like me shouldn't get to do. Like, what a privilege it is. This is what a privilege it is to speak in front of this meeting, because guys like me, that doesn't happen to. But anyway, my mother, the next day, she told me if I kept driving drunk, she was going to sell my car. How dare her. And the next day when I woke up, or the next morning or afternoon, about 2, I moseyed on out of my bedroom and looked at the kitchen table, and there was a wrecker receipt and $25. She sold my car. She still hasn't made amends to me for that, come to think of it, but I suppose she doesn't need to. I have a teenager now, so I'll see what I get to experience. But what comes around goes around, I suppose. I know I shouldn't drink, and I can't seem to stop drinking because the pain of sobriety is what the curse is. People tell me, Scott, if you just don't drink, you'd be okay. And I would try to just not drink, but I didn't have any hope. I saw the world as nasty. I thought it a nasty pain. I was the guy. Now, I've gotten a sponsor. Well, this is a kind of a funny story. What comes around goes around in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was the guy in school that when they do the team captains thing, I was the guy that they'd argue that the captain wanted on the other team the last one picked. You know, I was like, no, you take him. No, you take him. And today I've gotten to sponsor a few of those team captains and straighten them out on kindness and compassion. But I was really, I did virtually anything to change the way I was feeling because I did not feel enough sober. And that's why I would continue to drink, even though, you know, if the pain of our drinking kept us sober, the first time I did something painful, I would have stopped. But see, I've got this obsession that says somehow, someday, I can control and enjoy my drinking. And I have an aunt that's allergic to peanuts. When she eats a peanut, she gets hives and her throat swells up, where she's literally such, one time in her life, she ate a half a peanut and this happened. And she has never thought, boy, maybe I can eat peanuts if they're in Snickers. I've had worse things. I have had terrible things happen to me drinking, terrible things that you can't even share from the podium. And yet I thought, well, maybe if it's a different town or if it's a different brand or maybe if I have my friends watch me, boy, that's a terrible solution for an alcoholic to say, all right, friends, I want you to make sure I stay in line tonight. You know they're in for just a terrible night. And I probably need to get sober. But I was just absolutely had this obsession that I couldn't get rid of, that some way, somehow I could control it. And I never see, even though all my experience said it was once I started drinking, I had no control over what was going to happen, how much I would drink. And I usually drank until I passed out or blacked out or ran out of booze. So anyway, if you drink like I do, at some point or another, you get sent to treatment. At some point or another, they tell you to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I wound up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to be there. It was not something I wanted to accomplish in life. Hey, I want to go to AA. And I started going, and what saved my life was a guy in Alcoholics Anonymous got my phone number. And he was gone, and I had drank. Now, I drank knowing that if I drank, I would go to jail for a year. I was to go to AA meetings for a year, 2 a week. And that if I drank, I would go, and that didn't keep me from drinking. And the cycle was on again. I'd given up on Alcoholics Anonymous one more time. Now, mind you, I'd never really given it a try. I'd never worked the steps. I'd never really had a sponsor I listened to. I never went to meetings regularly. But I'd given up on Alcoholics Anonymous. And this guy by the name of Scott T., got my phone number. And 10 days later, because he got back in town, he called me. He called me when I was on my way out to drink again. Had he not been taught to call other people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I might not be here, because that guy called me, and for whatever reason, I decided, he asked me to go to coffee, and for whatever reason, I decided to go, and he shared his story with me, I thought it was the first time I'd really identified with alcoholism, because I'd never identified with alcoholism. People always talked about some of the consequences of drinking, and I think the consequences of drinking vary, but what happens to me, how I feel sober, and what drinking does for me is what determines whether I'm alcoholic or not, not necessarily some of the consequences. And he made Alcoholics Anonymous attractive, and he would call me and take me to meetings, and he made sobriety seem fun. And I thought maybe, just maybe, this would work for me like it had him. Now, I had a hard time believing he was like me, because when I met him, he was 6 or 7 years sober. He had a nice job. People liked him. I had the crazy mind. I didn't know what I was going to do. I mean, one of the thoughts I had was I was going to join the military, because I'd always tried to get into the military when I was drinking, but I kept getting DUIs, and they frown on that. You know, I discovered if you have one, you can get into the Air Force. If you got two, you're nipped down to the Army. And if you got three, you can't get into any. And he said, you know, if you do what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, your life will get better. And ultimately, I got involved in a home group, and he started taking me and some of the other guys he sponsored through the steps. And my life began to change. And it changed never as fast as I thought it should. And I was thinking about, and I don't know how much time I have left, but I really thought that I would have a miserable life. I really did. I thought that I left the state hospital in Jamestown, North Dakota, with the diagnosis that I would spend the rest of my life going in and out of institutions. What a bleak diagnosis. And but for Alcoholics Anonymous, that had been the case. Because it literally took someone like me that I was absolutely unteachable. I resented the world. You hear about people who had chips on their shoulders. I had 2 chips on my shoulders. And I didn't have a lot of hope. I always kind of felt like a second-class citizen. I always felt like my case was too severe. Alcoholics Anonymous totally changed the course of my life. And really what I wanted to do when I first started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to stay here long enough to get off probation, to move to California, to dye my hair blonde, and live on the beach. Because I really thought if I had blonde hair, things would be easier, and I really thought if I lived in California, things would be better. And what happened was I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the greatest things that Scott passed on to me was the idea that nothing so much will help me stay away from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And that does not seem like an attractive solution when you don't have a job and you don't know what you're going to do in life. And I think that what happened was is he encouraged me to go to college, which I would have never done because I had never really heard the word college in my house growing up. I didn't know anyone who'd went to college. And I started going to college, and I started going to meetings. And one thing about school is it's kind of interesting looking back in my sobriety. At one point, there was 6 of us that lived in this house. And I stayed active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I always worried I would be the one that didn't make it because one of the things that my first sponsor, his sponsor said to me, there was 3 of us in a room, and he said, a year from now, 2 of you will not be here. And I thought I was one of the 2. I thought I'm screwed because Mark is a much better AA member than me. Well, you know what? We're all still here, and I think that part of that is that you know a home group is very a home group to be a part of and to help build. And my sponsor's wife talks about today that we don't shoot our wounded in Alcoholics Anonymous because if we did, we'd all be dead. And that I need to have. You know, I've seen everybody's, or the people I know anyway, I've seen their human side. And no matter how hard I work Alcoholics Anonymous, I will never rise above being a human being. However, I've been given a program of action in which I can look at my part in things, which I can find my part in things, what my wrong is, where I can make amends, try to balance the books to make it right, to ask for some guidance from God, to talk to a sponsor when I'm not sure what direction I should go in, and to turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Because I did what I wanted, when I wanted, how I wanted, and going after everything I wanted. And that got me in and out of institutions that got me crying myself to sleep. I mean, I always felt like people looked at me like I was a loser. But at the end, I felt like a loser. At the end, I thought about when I was sober, what baffled me about alcoholism, I thought, why is it I'm 6 months sober and I'm more suicidal now than I ever was drinking? And so I have to find a way to live sober comfortably in my own skin. And nothing has helped me more than in my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, my sponsor told me that the guys that you work with will become your best friends and that you'll get a front row seat in the people, a lot of people's lives. And that's been the case for me. People who know me in Alcoholics Anonymous know that I really have a desire to be helpful. And I think one of the reasons that I have a desire to be helpful to other people is because it has helped me so much. It has helped me get through things that I don't think I could have got through otherwise than trying to be an example for someone else. And one of the things that happened to me when I was about 2 years sober, going to school and busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a call from a relative of mine. And I was too busy to return his phone call. And a week later, when it was convenient for me to call him back, I discovered that he'd left, but he was trying to reach me to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that he had went to California and shot himself in the head. And I always think that it's important for me to do what's in front of me, and that's one of the reasons that I think it's so valuable to one of the most spiritual things that I can do is do what I say I'm going to do. But the other thing I can do is do what's in front of me. When someone calls me, call them back. When I see someone struggling, give them a pat on the back. Oftentimes we talk about, you know, I would say the welfare of the new person is very important, and that I want to be around the people that want to be here, and that sometimes the person still struggling isn't the new person. I've had many struggles in sobriety. At 6 years sober, Chad got to hear my money doesn't matter talk as I threw my laptop across the room to demonstrate that theory, that money doesn't matter. And after what had happened was is they wanted a new guy I'd been working with at the jail to move into the house we were living in. And they, as their sponsor, they overrode me and said they did not want this guy from the jail living with us because they would perhaps he would steal their stuff. And to demonstrate that money doesn't matter, I chucked my laptop across the room. Of course, after they left, I quickly made sure it worked again. And I was trained in Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that I was getting warning signs there, and so I called my sponsor. And my sponsor said, well, your house is, you're not running a mission. And that if they don't want him to live there, that maybe that's the right thing to do and you ought to go along with it. And here's how you're going to make that right. And it gave me a comfort knowing what I was going to need to do to make it right. Because I caused a lot of damage in my drinking. And I'm quick to blame other people because that's what I always thought it was. It was other people. And what I've discovered is that I am the creator of 99% of my problems, and that focusing on Scott does not fix anything, and that if I am to, I need to move towards God's will for me, and that doesn't always jive with my will for me. In closing, to give you a little bring up to speed on NPG, I don't know that I had much of a part in the Northern Plains group, but I know something. When I was 4 years sober and I was graduating from college, one of the things I'd done is I joined the National Guard because I always wanted to be in the military, and I went to officer candidate school because I want to be in charge too, you know. And they would not give me a waiver for criminal convictions, and I was pissed. I thought, I'm 4 years sober, I've been active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's just, you know, and I was thinking about writing senators, suing the National Guard, any number of things. And I talked to my sponsor, and he said, you know, something better is out there. Why don't you do the next indicated task? And the next indicated task at that point was, since I wasn't going to commission and wasn't going to be an officer in the National Guard, it meant that I wouldn't have a job out of college. It meant that I would have to start looking for a job. And so I started mailing out 10 resumes and cover letters a week, and I got a job. And first I thought I should start a company for rejection letters because I got a lot of them too. And but I got this job, and this job took me to Jamestown, North Dakota. And Jeff was one of the people that helped me move down there. And that first night, we went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that meeting was Chad B. At that meeting was Chad B. I put your two co-founders together because they ran into me in brief periods of their life. And because of living in Jamestown, North Dakota, a lot of things have happened to me that wouldn't have normally happened. One, I get to live in the town in which people told me I would spend the rest of my life going in and out of institutions. And they're right, but it's only to take meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous into them. And I've got to watch. I've gotten a front row seat in a lot of people's lives, a lot of people's lives that a guy like me doesn't get. The other person that was at that meeting was Mike S., a guy I sponsor here. There's at this meeting, there's people that I've sponsored. There's I don't know how many people that I sponsor are here tonight, but people I've had a front row seat in. And a guy like me doesn't get a front row seat in anybody's lives. I'm usually a taker. I'm not a giver. And Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to be a giver some of the time. And in closing, I think I'm out of time, but today I have my bride, Shannon, is my wife, and I think that she is my life's companion. And we do things because of the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous that allow us, after being married, to continue to build our relationship. I have 5 children, and I keep busy. And I keep busy with them, and I have a business, and that I kind of always wanted but never thought it was possible. And all those things are contingent, and I love them, but all those things are contingent on me putting my recovery first. Because if I don't have my recovery, we've got to remember, I'm a never was. If I don't have my recovery, I will get real uncomfortable sober. And if I get too uncomfortable sober, I won't be here, because there's a lot of good people smarter than me, more spiritual than me, that are not here. And there are a lot of people that at one time sat beside Jeff and Chad at meetings that are not here. And I'll guarantee you the one thing I know about people that aren't here is they're not doing as well as the people that are. They might for a little while. But usually, I just seen another obituary of a guy I sponsored in Jamestown at one point. That what you didn't see is it didn't say he died of alcoholism. It just explained his life, where he moved from this town to this town to this town to this town to this town and started all these different careers. And he was in that midst of brief recovery followed by worse relapse. And I hope that we all have time to go out of our way a little bit to be encouraging to someone who maybe isn't doing as well as we are that's sitting beside us. And thank you for my sobriety.